It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Coming up, the latest on the Ebola outbreak and dealing with the Islamic State militants. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is ending the state of emergency in her country, the one she instituted because of the Ebola crisis. In a speech on Thursday, she said, however, the fight against Ebola is not over and that some restrictions will remain in place.
Until the national goal of zero new cases by Christmas is achieved all across the country, we will keep many of the previous measures in place with appropriate adjustments consistent with the progress in our fight.
Liberia had been under a state of emergency since August. Of the three African nations where the outbreak has been centered, along with Guinea and Sierra Leone, Liberia is the worst hit by the epidemic. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said Thursday the U.S.-led air war against Islamic State militants will intensify in the future as Iraqi ground forces improve and become more effective. Defending the U.S. strategy during a House of Representatives hearing, Mr. Hagel said that there could be setbacks and that steady, sustainable progress, though, is being made.
Since I testified before this committee 2 months ago, our campaign against ISIL has made progress. ISIL's advance in parts of Iraq has stalled, and in some cases been reversed by Iraqi, Kurdish, and tribal forces supported by U.S. and coalition airstrikes.
Last week, President Obama approved sending up to 1,500 additional troops to Iraq to help train Iraqis fighting the Islamic State militants. This is VOA News. United States and the European Union are strengthening ties in an effort to crack down on foreign fighters returning from Syria intent on carrying out terrorist attacks in their home country. VOA's Jim Malone has details.
After 2 days of talks in Washington, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced stronger cooperation with European Union ministers aimed at identifying and stopping foreign fighters from carrying out acts of terrorism.
The Department of Justice has detailed federal prosecutors and senior law enforcement advisors to reside in key regions, including the Balkans, the Middle East, and North Africa, to work with countries seeking to increase their capacity to investigate and to prosecute foreign terrorist fighters.
A UN report estimates 15,000 fighters from around the world have left their home countries to join extremist groups operating in Syria and Iraq. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Ukrainian military spokesman said Thursday that a buildup of Russian military hardware is continuing in areas of eastern Ukraine controlled by pro-Moscow separatists. Andriy Lysenko said in Kiev that officials are constantly seeing Russian military equipment with what he called terrorist markings, an apparent reference to the separatists moving up the front line dividing the two sides. Moscow denies involvement in eastern Ukraine. In Hong Kong, protesters are vowing to keep up their street demonstrations as some pro-democracy leaders pledge to turn themselves into police as a show of respect for Hong Kong law. Shannon Van Zandt reporting now from Beijing.
China's President Xi Jinping Wednesday called Hong Kong's protest illegal and said that law and order must be maintained. His comments were just the latest sign that Beijing's patience with the demonstrations is diminishing. Among protesters, there is a belief that authorities could begin enforcing a court order to clear protest sites in the coming days. Protester Pa Sha, who is with a group called Socialist Action, is camped out in central Hong Kong. He says the demonstrations will continue even if police succeed in clearing streets. Hong Kong's government has injunctions on the main demonstration sites. Acting Chief Executive Carrie Lam has said police are preparing to enforce the law, including making arrests. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
And forecasters are predicting another hazard that could come with global warming, more lightning. Experts writing in the journal Science said there could be a 50% more lightning strikes on Earth by the end of the century. More lightning could lead to more people being hit, more wildfires, and a bigger chance to danger to wildlife.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burkina Faso's military, politicians, civil and religious groups approved an outline for a transitional government.
This National Council of Transition is made up of 19 members, 30 members from the political parties, the current opposition, 25 members from the civil society organization, 25 members from the army and the security staff, and 10 members from the ex-majority.
Isaka Traore is a member of the civil society in charge of communication. Nigeria's main opposition party vows to fight President Jonathan in next year's elections. And the people of Liberia's West Point rejoice over the lifting of the Ebola state of emergency.
The lifting of the state of emergency, as you can get from behind me now, it brought about a kind of walking out of jail after you have not committed a crime for which somebody had to hold you back and tell you to not do X, Y, Z that you normally did.
Achi Pompon is a member of Respect Incorporated, a local NGO headquarters in West Point. The Obama administration asked Congress for $6 billion to fight Ebola in West Africa. Zambia's ruling party endorses a presidential candidate, and a new Band 8 single premieres this Sunday, 30 years after the original. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A member of a civil society group in Burkina Faso says the agreement on a plan for transitional government is a tribute to the people of Burkina Faso who took to the streets to demand the ouster of President Blaise Compaoré. Isaka Traore also praises the military for making concessions to the civilian population in the interest of the country. This came after the country's military, politicians, civil and religious groups on Thursday approved an outline for a transitional government which will eventually lead to the transfer of power from the military to a civilian-led government. Traore says the government will also be made up of 90-seat parliament.
We, the people of Burkina Faso, civil society organizations, political parties, traditional chiefs, religious leaders, and the army agree that we constitute a charge for the transition, and this charge has several institutions and bodies, the president of the transition, who is going to be a civilian. A civilian who is not coming from the political party, but who is coming from the civil society organization. Once the president is elected, he will appoint a prime minister who will make the cabinet for the government. We also ask people of Burkina Faso that will ask the National Council of Transition, which will play the role of the parliament.
So how many people are going to come from the opposition parties, and how many people are going to come from the civil society and from the military?
National Council of Transition is made up of 19 members, 30 members from the political parties, the current opposition, 25 members from the civil society organization, 25 members from the army and the security staff, and 10 members from the ex-majority. We also agree that there is a need to make some reforms in our constitution and our administration. Therefore, there will be a commission of reconciliation and national cohesion located at the prime minister. And we have almost 67 sub-commissions, among which the sub-commission Truth, Justice, and Reconciliation.
The military leader says that the military made a lot of concessions. What type of concessions do you think he's talking about?
We just ask them to take into consideration the interest of our country, the interest of our people, because if there is any sanction on Burkina Faso, it will affect the army officers, but it's going to affect the ordinary citizens. For instance, yesterday they said they want to be the head of the parliament. Yesterday they were not talking about the commission Truth, Justice and Reconciliation. Today they said they are fine with it. I think we should say today that bravo to the army of Burkina Faso.
The agreement said that the interim parliament, the National Transitional Council, the leader will be a civilian elected by his peers. How soon before we know who is going to lead the transitional process?
Right now, we don't know because we have the army will give three names, the political party will give three names, and civil society organization will give three names, and then the electoral college will assess and interview the candidate before we appoint the president of the transition.
Do you think this will please the African Union, because the African Union wanted the military to at least turn the government over to civilian in 2 weeks?
I think most of the international community partners will agree with us and then support us because the most key thing was the bottlenecks, and we have overcame the bottlenecks to come to an agreement, a consensus with all the people of Burkina Faso. Tomorrow we are able to sign the charter. And by signing the charter, when we are going back to the rule of the constitution, to the rule of democracy, there won't be any problem with the international community.
Isaka Traoré is a member of the civil society in charge of communication and information. He was speaking with me from the Burkina Faso capital, Ouagadougou. As Nigeria's ruling party gathered this week to endorse President Goodluck Jonathan for a second term in office, the main opposition group, the All Progressives Congress, is still deciding who its candidate will be. APC chief spokesman Lyle Mohammed talks to VOA's Chris Stein in the capital, Abuja, about how the upstart party hopes to convince voters to dump Mr. Jonathan.
The People's Democratic Party has held power in Nigeria since the return of democracy in 1999. Incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan this week declared his intention to run under the party's banner for a second term. But with the extremist group Boko Haram overrunning territory in Nigeria's northeast and power outages still common across Africa's largest economy, a recently founded coalition of opposition parties is hoping Nigerian voters are ready for change. Lai Mohammed is the chief spokesman of the All Progressives Congress.
I believe Nigerians are ready for change. You see, Jonathan has exploited the political fault lines of Nigeria, such as religion and ethnicity. And that's what he campaigns on. Unfortunately, Nigerians are not buying that.
The APC was created last year as a merger of several opposition groups. Its prospective presidential candidates include former military leader Muhammadu Buhari, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, and the sitting governor of the northern Kano state, Rabiu Kwankwaso. Muhammad expects the party to perform well in the southwest, particularly in the largest city, Lagos, as well as in the north, all areas that have traditionally supported candidates opposed to the ruling PDP. Three of the leading candidates are Muslims, who comprise about half of Nigeria's population. Muhammad dismissed allegations that the APC is a Muslim party.
Our greatest weakness, I think, is the attempt to paint us as a Muslim party, which of course they know is not true, but I think gradually Nigerians are now getting to understand and to believe that it is nothing but a ploy of a government that has failed. So what we need to do is work more to reassure Nigerians that we are a pan-Nigerian political party.
A retired major general, Buhari was put in power by a military coup and ran Nigeria from 1983 to 1985. His regime was criticized for numerous human rights abuses, including an attempt to kidnap a former transportation minister from Britain and bring him back to Nigeria. Muhammad defended Buhari's actions during military rule, saying they were the right thing to do at the time.
Of course, you can't compare the human rights, violation or human rights preservation under a military, government to that of a civilian government. And most of his critics will come out and say, he had breached their, human rights, civil rights and human rights. And for crying out loud, when the military, when they come in, the first thing they do is that they suspend your constitution. So you can't expect any benevolence as such from a military regime. But in terms of giving the country a direction, giving the country pride, giving the country hope, at least he did very well.
The APC plans to hold a convention to select its candidate on December 10th. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, November 14. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. The residents of Liberia's West Point, who bore the brunt of the Ebola state of emergency, have been rejoicing since it was lifted Thursday by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. With most of them marketers and peddlers, the state of emergency and its related restrictions deprived West Point residents of their daily way of life. The densely populated borough was also quarantined for 10 days as part of the government's effort to control the spread of the Ebola virus. Archie Pompon is a member of Respecting Cooperator, a local human rights NGO headquartered in West Point. He says the residents feel as if they have just been released from jail where they had been sent for a crime that they did not commit.
They left me on the state of emergency, as you can get from behind me now. There are too many people now. They are very much convinced and happy that they have fought a good fight for which the state of emergency is lifted and everybody is gradually moving around and happily doing what they are now doing. It brought about a kind of walking out of jail after you have not committed a crime for which somebody had to hold you back and tell you to not do X, Y, Z that you normally did. And so it was spreading on people. It was kind of a strange situation for many young people who normally found that they did it by either by night or by moving around. And so they later on the state of emergency relieved them of the kind of a stress it once had on them. And so it's a jubilation within the community.
In a way, Mr. Pompon, do you think the state of emergency had an impact? Because now we hear that perhaps the number of Ebola cases probably is going down. So do you think, in a sense, the state of emergency had an impact?
No, technically, the state of emergency did not play a role in terms of reducing the number of cases of Ebola. What it did is that it just created a situation where people were stuck up and were forced to interact tightly with each other on a very close basis. The state of emergency was not pictured from the perspective in terms of medical attention towards the Ebola poison. Many people that came westward saw it from the military standpoint where somebody had to die.
During the Ebola crisis, I think there was a lot of international goodwill towards Liberia. What do you think this will do now to the healthcare system of Liberia? Do you think it will improve the Liberia healthcare system?
A good way from the international community, like the AU non-delegation of health workers and the children coming to Liberia, will help.
Mr. Pompon, the Liberian military has come up with a report on the West Point incident, finding 5 soldiers guilty, culpable of the shooting that took place. What is the reaction from West Point and your own viewpoint in terms of their findings?
The coming of the report has saw too many demonstrations. They saw protests in 2 days since Monday and Tuesday of this week. Monday, there was a huge protest calling for the relief of the commissioner of opposition because he mainly was because of which 3 persons were badly wounded, that included my brother, Professor Kroma, and the killing of Shaki Kamara. And so the White House was blaming the situations on the commission and trying to evacuate with her parents. But they are still confused because the military court have not been able to establish as to who did the shooting in terms of what happened to Shaki.
That was our Chief Pompon, a member of Respect Incorporated, a local NGO headquartered in Liberia's densely populated borough of West Point. The administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Rajiv Shah, and other senior U.S. officials testified before a congressional panel on Thursday about the international reaction to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Shah called on Congress to approve President Barack Obama's request for $6.2 billion in emergency funding to combat the deadly disease. VOA Cindy Singh has the story from Capitol Hill.
As the suffering in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea continues, with some 3,000 active cases of Ebola reported now, the House Foreign Affairs Committee praised the U.S. response to the crisis. But some lawmakers accused the World Health Organization of incompetence, including Ed Royce, the Republican committee chairman. He warned that the world still has a lot to do.
What has worked in the past to block Ebola, obviously, is breaking the chain of transmission. But without us doing that, Ebola will continue to spill across borders and economies will be devastated in Africa. Governments will fail. Tens of thousands will die.
Most members said they support providing the emergency funding the Obama administration is asking for and also called on countries around the world to step up their efforts. Ranking member Democrat Elliot Engel.
As I have said, the U.S. cannot meet this challenge alone. Ebola is a global challenge requiring a global response. Fortunately, international efforts to control the epidemic in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea have increased, both in terms of financial support and on-the-ground assistance.
USAID Administrator Rajiv Shah said he had met with 65 burial teams on his recent visit to Liberia, and that these efforts are really helping to bring down the number of new infections to that country. He said the U.S. is also reviewing new options for protective suits for healthcare workers because they are at greatest risk of contracting the virus when taking off the protective gear. But Shaw rejected calls from Royce and others for a travel ban on people from the most affected countries.
And I think we're convinced that America is the signal decision maker. If we isolate these countries, the rest of the world will isolate these countries, and that will create a much different epidemic curve, and we'll all have to come back here and discuss how are we going to handle many, many, many additional cases than what we're looking at now.
Shaw said the international community should also be prepared for the Ebola outbreak to be followed by a hunger crisis in the region and get ready to provide quick relief. Cindy Sain, VOA News, on Capitol Hill.
The Central Committee of Zambia's governing Patriotic Front Party has endorsed Home Affairs Minister Edgar Lungu as its candidate ahead of the presidential by-election scheduled to be held in January to replace deceased President Michael Sata. Alex Ungoma, political scientist and lecturer at the University of Zambia, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the Patriotic Front Party could be in trouble if it fails to put its house in order during the run-up to the presidential vote.
Our concerns as Zambians are that if this process of selecting a presidential candidate by the Patriotic Front is not managed properly, it will surely create instability in the party, which will in turn spill over to the entire nation. All of us are being very, very cautious about that.
Dr. Ngoma, don't you think that this apparent uncertainty within the ruling party could create ample chance for some of these opposition parties, including Hakainde Hichilema, Father Frank Bwalya, Neves Mumba, and the rest, to possibly win the presidential runoff?
Yes, indeed. The members of the ruling party have to be very, very careful at this particular time to avoid committing what I'm calling a political suicide. The kind of decisions they make on the way forward will actually have an effect on what finally happened on that day when the elections will be held. If the ruling party does not come up with a candidate who enjoys popular support from the members, a candidate who does not have marketability, then I'm afraid there will be consequences on that election day. So the opposition and political parties must also be very strategic in everything that they do. I am very sure they are busy watching what is happening in the ruling party. So depending on how they organize themselves, this could possibly be their chance.
Some Zambians are expressing that the ruling party has yet to recover from the death of President Sata, and that it's not helping matters for them to move ahead to choose a leader to lead them in the presidential by-election in January next year.
I think that it would not be correct to say that the members of the Patriotic Front still appear to be a little bit confused. They already know what lies ahead. They know that there is a very serious threat of loss of power if they don't play their cards right. And so they are busy mobilizing. We are hearing calls from all over the place. They seem to know what they want. The problem I see is that of failing to manage this process to make sure that it doesn't send mixed signals all over the country and across the world.
Alex Ngoma is a political scientist and lecturer at the University of Zambia. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. A new Band 8 single will premiere this Sunday, 30 years after the original entitled Do They Know It's Christmas was released to raise funds for famine relief in Africa. Vanessa Rubo is co-founder and president of OK Africa, a website that features music and fashion from all over the continent. Rubo tells Ricky Stryer that the original song decades ago created an impression that Africa has had a tough time shaking off ever since.
Our first reaction was a big collective eye roll. We think that the project is really ill-advised and potentially damaging.
And why do you think it's ill-advised, and what could possibly be damaging about it?
I think that the initial Band-Aid basically created and perpetuated stereotypes of Africa that last until this day and still remain the predominant narrative about Africa in Western media. And what I mean by that is basically it lumps together people of a very wide and varied continent into one group. It suggests that Africa is a land of disease, conflict, and hardship, and nothing more. I'll just quote if you want. Here's one of the quotes. There's a world outside your window. It's a world of dread and fear, where the only water flowing is the bitter sting of tears. And the Christmas bells that ring there are the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God, it's them instead of you. And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time.
You mentioned that this created a vision and an image of Africa in people's minds that still lingers 30 years later, of this place where there's nothing, that's a land of barren waste and everyone's starving. Is there a specific concern, too, by making this album one about Ebola, when there is already so much fear in the West and already there's been instances of people stereotyping Africans who've been to Rwanda where there is no Ebola, or mistreating Africans from all over the continent because of Ebola? Is there a concern that this will make it worse for them?
I think that there is a real concern that this will make it worse. And I think that, again, it will create really damaging narratives and stereotypes that can linger on for decades.
Vanessa Rubo is co-founder and president of OK Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from New York. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Botswana host Tunisia in Gaborone as Sierra Leone challenge Ivory Coast in Abidjan in 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Malawi play Mali. Cameroon face the Democratic Republic of Congo. South Africa engage Sudan as the Republic of Congo play African champions Nigeria. In other matches, Togo play Guinea. Uganda tackle Ghana. Cape Verde Islands host Niger. Lesotho face Burkina Faso. Angola play Gabon. Mozambique engage Zambia. Egypt host Senegal as Algeria play Ethiopia. Elsewhere, Kenya encounter Iran. Morocco play Zimbabwe as Swaziland host Tanzania in friendly matches tomorrow, Saturday. Meanwhile, the 2010 FIFA World Cup Legacy Trust is to construct a football technical development center to support a sustainable improvement in South African football. South Africa Football Association President Danny Jordan explains.
TAS agreed that we must have a national technical center for South African football. And we just see when we look at the young players and how their lives will impact and change, we said we have to do it. It must be a living memory, an icon center of the FIFA World Cup in South Africa. This will be unveiled next year. And when we are ready, we will show you what would provide the basis for South African football to get back amongst the leading nations on this continent and in the world.
That was Danny Jordan, South Africa Football Association president, speaking at the High Performance Center, University of Pretoria, in South Africa's capital, Tshwane. In cycling, South African defending champion Dylan Girdlestone faces a stiff challenge when the week-long tour of Rwanda starts in Kigali on Sunday. He will encounter cyclists from Algeria, Cameroon, Eritrea, Ethiopia, France, Germany, Kenya, Morocco, South Africa, the United States of America, and hosts Rwanda. Finally, the two-day Commonwealth Taekwondo Championship gets underway in Edinburgh, Scotland tomorrow, Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has ended the state of emergency that she instituted because of the Ebola crisis. But in a speech on Thursday, Ms. Sirleaf said the fight against Ebola is not over and that some restrictions will remain in place. That's it for this Friday, November 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strack, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer James Harmon, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you a very good weekend.
Hello, I'm Sunday Shomari. Next on Let's Talk,
witchcraft. Witchcraft is a topic we'll discuss in our new lighthearted show, Let's Talk. So join me, Sunday Shomari, and my guests as we explore witchcraft with some hilarity. That's Let's Talk, Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.